Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
You're listening to Montana Talks, bringing truth and freedom to Montana. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
Well, Aaron Flint is not here this morning. This is John Jackson. Good morning, all. High atop the Doubletree Hotel here at Montana Talks. Aaron is out this morning. He is at the Plentywood KATQ Farm Expo, and he's going to be back with us live at the 8 a.m. hour out on remote. He'll be live out there. I'm sure he'll be talking. A bunch of people will stop by and be talking to him straight person to person. But until then, it's just us. And the phone number to call, as everyone knows, is 406-294-0970. Make sure we've got Caden in here, and Caden says he wants you to burn up these phone lines. So call in and talk about the topic of the day, talk about whatever we're talking about in here, or talk about something you want to talk about. I thought I'd open up this morning with something funny. At least I think it's funny. Comes out yesterday that you guys know the group Greenpeace. Anybody over the age of, got to be over the age of 40, has heard of Greenpeace. You haven't heard much of them. They've kind of, with all of the domestic terror groups out there now, Greenpeace has kind of, you know, fallen to the bottom as far as notoriety. But say going back into 70s, 80s, 90s, they were the primary domestic terror group in the United States. And what they basically did was go out and attack ships that they thought were doing illegal fishing or attack oil pipelines, things like that. They were domestic terror. They were climate people before that. All of that stuff was cool. Well, in a lawsuit that came out yesterday, I'll read it to you. Greenpeace is ordered to pay the Dakota Access Pipeline operator $667 million in a case that could possibly destroy the group. And that is for defamation. This is all out of the Washington Post. Now, who knows? Very, very possible that one of these billionaires or some money that Joe Biden's people put into an NGO or squirreled away in some bank somewhere in all of their little schemes could come riding to Greenpeace's rescue. I know that's always possible, yes. But we can only hope that this signals the end of Greenpeace. The funny videos, for those of you out there of a certain age, the funny videos of Greenpeace were the ones where they would be out attacking these gigantic ships. And they could be oil ships or fishing. And they would try to go up and attack these people and then capsize themselves. It's pretty funny. You have to see it. Well, there is the music, and we will be right back in a second. Reach out here and call. I need to hear from you guys. 406-294-0970. Be right back.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. We'll see increasing cloudiness across the region today and some areas of rain and snow moving in towards the Livingston and Bozeman areas this afternoon. Rain showers possible later this afternoon in Billings. For tonight, a few rain and snow showers around early on. Otherwise, low temperatures from 22 in Bozeman to around 32 degrees in the Billings area. That's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm meteorologist Paul Frombly.
Securing America.
A recent House Homeland Security Committee hearing focused on the national security threat posed by China, which was summed up this way by Mississippi Democrat Benny Thompson.
The CCP is looking for every opportunity to undermine our security and get the upper hand.
Mississippi Republican Michael Guest adding that this conflict is a marathon and not a sprint.
China is willing to play the long game and build up his power over the course of decades.
However, Dr. Michael Pillsbury, the senior fellow for China strategy at the Heritage Foundation, claimed America is still not prepared to properly combat Chinese efforts.
There's no annual report on how are we doing vis-a-vis, let's say, 20 or 30 indicators with China. So we're working in the dark.
Dr. Pillsbury warning that until those type of measures are implemented, we are no match for China's all-of-country approach. Kidney Rescue, Fox News.
Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors. Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August. Be a lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast, like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search our names, Clay and Buck. Listen and subscribe.
Montana Talks, uniting the Treasure State, one conversation at a time. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
Hey, welcome back. This is John Jackson. Don't forget, the number to call in here is 406-294-0970. Want to start out this morning with a basic look at what you have today as the modern day Democrat Party. And a lot of people, and particularly those of us of a certain age, or those of us who really don't pay attention to the news. You see, there's a lot of people out there that as they get up in the morning, they'll catch 30 minutes of one of those good morning shows, or they'll catch the headlines of their newspaper, the headlines on something on an app on their phone. And then that's it. They're going about their day. That's their extent of their daily consuming of the news. And if you're not following it really, really close or listening to shows like the Aaron Flint Show, like Montana Talks, or you're out there on social media, on these different apps, you don't really know what's going on. And you know why? Because, see, the mainstream media out there, and that includes all of your local Montana media, your local paper, your local TV stations, and, of course, the national people, none of them are going to tell you what's going on with the modern-day Democrats. All they do is focus on whatever good is happening with them, and then they go and attack Republicans. Well, here's the bottom line on all of them today. Your modern-day Democrat Party are domestic terrorists. And they have been that way going back to, we're talking 2015. This is 10 years of this now, of burning our cities. You guys all remember BLM and Antifa back during Obama's time. Burning our cities, attacking and killing police officers, rioting en masse all over the country, taking cities and streets and interstates to a standstill, right? What they do on a monthly basis makes what happened on January 6th look like a picnic, right? Well, just in the last couple of weeks, they are out there. I've got a list of it right here. They are out there swatting conservatives around the country. I bet none of y'all have heard of that. Big, big conservative voices out there, most of them on social media, some on television, are being swatted. That's also a term a lot of people have not heard of. That's where these terrorists make a phone call into the local law enforcement, local police or sheriff, and claim there's some emergency going on at your residence, which causes a SWAT or tactical group of police to show up at your house prepared to kick the door in. It's a form of terror. It's going on all over the country. The good news about that is these people are being found out and being arrested. The FBI is under Kash Patel, and Dan Bongino is engaged in this And this is no longer being just sloughed off anymore. It is being attacked and investigated, and these people are going to get caught and go to jail. Unfortunately, a lot of this is done by intelligence operations here, domestically and overseas. It's done through VPNs and camouflaged, and maybe sometimes it's going to be very, very hard to find out who did it just because of the age of technology we live in. The second thing they're doing, probably a lot of y'all have seen this, they are invading and shutting down universities and hotels in support of terrorism. It's all right now, you know, it's no more Black Lives Matter, and it's no more, they're not doing the climate stuff right now. It's all about terrorism in support of terror. You've seen all the elite universities, the universities that if your kid went there, you're paying God knows how much a year, $50,000, $60,000 a year for your kid to go there. They're shutting down these universities, and they invaded Trump Tower the other day in New York. It had to be close to 100 people that were in there, invaded the lobby, and the police had to come in there and arrest them all. They are mobilizing across the country. Now they're putting up these fake phony town halls so they can all have a little group therapy session and tell everybody about how much they hate Donald Trump and yell and scream. And of course, your local and national media obediently comes in there and films everything and then puts it out over the air to try to make you think that now everybody hates Donald Trump. They're also out there doxing and trying to destroy conservative voices that way. Doxing is also another modern term, which means if you're out there on social media anywhere just acting as an anonymous voice, they make it their point to find out who you really are, where you live, you know, your entire family, your businesses, any of that, and put that out all over their networks. And it's a big signal in the sky for all of their scumbag supporters to come out and attack you. You become then a victim of their domestic terror. Boycotts, firebombs, all this stuff, you name it. They just did it to this gal named Data Republican down in Salt Lake. The Salt Lake Tribune, the newspaper down in Salt Lake, participated in this doxing. You might have all seen this as well. They're out there attacking Elon Musk and his car dealerships all over the country, setting fire to them. Firebombing the dealerships and the cars themselves. Well, and there's way more to that. I'm not even close to being done. But there is the music, so we're coming up to the break. And I will see you guys back here in just a minute.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
Economists worry about things that ordinary people don't give a second thought to. We try to measure growth. After all, that requires measuring what the economy produces. It's easy in this rough sense. We convert physical production to dollars and add it all up, using the prices of the products, of course. But here's a new problem that's emerging. A lot of what was produced in the digital economy has no price. Consider the production of photographs. Once upon a time, that involved film, services to produce it, and the printing of photos. Cash changed hands, we added it up. No problem. Not so today. Smartphones give us endless pictures for nothing. Just as online searches, social media posts, and other digital content yields value yet commands no price. Measured in the traditional way, photography has shrunk significantly in the last 20 years. But the digital economy is actually growing, almost twice as fast as everything else, according to new research from the federal statistical agencies. I'm Patrick Parkin.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.
I'm Chad Pergram with the Speaker's Lobby. One of the next big crises on Capitol Hill is addressing the debt ceiling. And Senate Majority Leader John Thune has deputized Republican Louisiana Senator John Kennedy to develop a strategy for raising the debt limit later this year. Kennedy notes that President Trump and most markets aren't ready to focus on the debt ceiling just yet. A failure for Congress to increase the debt ceiling could send shockwaves across already skittish financial markets and around the world. Kennedy's role could present Republicans with options for preventing the U.S. from defaulting on its $36 trillion and counting debt later this year. Kennedy asked Trump and Vice President J.D. Vance point blank to start thinking about a plan for lifting the nation's borrowing cap to head off a default. The president asked Congress to include a debt ceiling increase in its year-end government funding package in December. But many Republicans balked, so there's unfinished business. office. Congress is still waiting for the Treasury Department to issue a prediction for when the U.S. could default on its debt. It's believed to come sometime between June and August. With the Speaker's Lobby, Chad Pergram, Fox News.
Morning, everybody. It's time for your Daybreak Ag Report. I'm Russell Nimitz, and thanks for being with us here on the Western Ag Network. Well, they say in life only two things are certain, death and taxes. And this week, Montana Governor Greg Gianforte, along with Senator Josh Kazmaier of Fort Benton and local ag producers, urged support for reforms to the business equipment tax.
I'm so proud of Senator Kazmaier's work to, we've already taken 5,000 small businesses, farms and ranches off the business equipment tax rolls since 2021, but we need to do more. And the proposal in front of the legislature right now would do exactly that.
Now, during a visit to Circle View Farms in Fort Benton, Governor Gianforte and Senator Kazmaier met with fourth-generation farmer Brent Hanford on the importance of raising the exemption to take more farms and ranches off of the business equipment tax roll.
The business equipment tax exemption is huge to me because we're at a million right now, and a lot of family farms, even though it could be smaller acreages, it doesn't take much to get to $1 million of equipment. A new tractor's $500,000, a new combine is $700,000 with a header, so two pieces of equipment will get you over $1 million in a hurry. I think the $3 million exemption is one of those things, like I said earlier, that as prices and markets and the industry evolves, the government has to adapt and change those policies too.
And reducing the burden of the business equipment tax, Kazmaier's Senate Bill 322 continues to encourage business investment and promote job creation. The bill itself is scheduled to be heard in the Senate Taxation Committee on March 27th. Stay with us for more Ag News right after this.
Ready to get serious about horn fly control this year? Smart Lick Tubs, fortified with Altacid feed-through fly control, is the most convenient and proven supplement solution available to cattle producers. Altacid works by breaking the life cycle of horn flies. Smart Lick with Altacid should be fed 30 days before last frost throughout the warm months and 30 days after the first frost in fall. It's not just another tub. It's proven fly control. Don't wait. Visit smartlick.com. That's Smart L-I-C.
Are you looking for a bull that can perform in the big country? Black Summit Cattle invites you to their annual bull sale March 21st at 1 o'clock p.m. in Powell, Wyoming. Offering 97 pup-tested St. Angus bulls developed for large pastures, high desert country, and longevity. Specializing in producing cattle that make your life easier and your business more profitable. For more information, visit blacksummitcattle.com, and you can also bid live at bid.superiorlivestock.com. Black Summit Cattle, where cattle that perform get the ribbon. Well, a proposal out from the U.S. Trade Representative to impose new fees on ocean carriers with ties to China could take a major toll on America's farmers and ranchers. Two-thirds of all agriculture exports by volume are shipped overseas, and the cost of transporting them to international trading partners could increase dramatically. In an effort to address China's dominance in global shipbuilding and logistics, the Trump administration has proposed a series of fees targeting Chinese-operated vessels and Chinese-built vessels that access U.S. ports. Individual fees would go as high as $1.5 million per port call. American Farm Bureau Federation economists analyzed the impact in the latest market intel report and found that depending on the fees applied, bulk agricultural exporters could face an additional $372 million to $930 million in annual transportation costs. For the Western Ag Network, I'm Russell Nimitz.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Hey, welcome back. Welcome back. This is John Jackson sitting in for Aaron. He's out in Plentywood. He'll be back here at 8 o'clock. We left off there before the last break talking about Democrats being domestic terrorists. And I had one more on the list, and it rolls us right into the next topic. And that last one was what they also do as a part of their domestic terror campaign is they engage in non-stop lawfare. back before Christmas, the New York Times had an article that came out that said they already had a fund of several hundred million dollars that was going to be dedicated to nothing but doing this, suing the Trump administration at every move. And if you watch, they make sure and take these lawsuits in areas like, say, New York, D.C., California, areas where they know they are going to pull one of their far-left radical loony judges that is going, this is just another Democrat operative is who that is. It's a Democrat operative wearing robes. It's not any kind of learned, august judge, any kind of man of justice. No, these are just radical loons wearing robes. And in just the last couple of days, the list of what these judges have done is really just not to be believed. They have ordered Elon Musk to reinstate USAID workers, which right off the bat, Elon Musk is not the one that fired them, so Elon Musk cannot reinstate them. Only Donald Trump did that. That just shows you not only how radical these judges are, but really just how stupid they are. They ordered the Trump administration to disclose when and where flights left the United States with terrorists on board. As far as I've seen, as of yesterday, the Trump response in courtrooms has been to tell them, that judge, no, we're not going to tell you that. I think they're resisting it at every turn, which they should. They've ordered the Department of Defense to reinstate transgender people in the military. They've ordered the reinstatement of Department of Education grants. And they've also ordered the Trump administration to open back up this fund of $20 billion that is sitting at a private bank, that what the Biden regime did right as they were going out the door, shoveled this money into a private bank out there so they could hide it from Donald Trump. That's just the first of a long list of what they're up to right now. And we'll get into some of that when we come right back, because I think we just had a minute here at the bottom of the hour for the Fox News break, and we'll be right back here in a second. And we're back, and we're back. That was kind of odd because I can't hear. Normally you can hear the Fox News break here in the studio, so I couldn't even hear that whole thing. It was just dead air in here. So then I had to get Caden to tell me when we were coming back. But luckily we did not have any dead air there. At least I don't think we did. But back to that, what we were talking about before we went to break there was the judges. Nonstop lawfare. And there's several different avenues to this. These judges are, it's a several pronged strategy. Of course, the first thing is very, very obvious. They're trying to delay, obstruct, antagonize the Trump administration as long as they can. And you know, it's basically just throwing anything up against the wall and see what will stick. The other little insidious thing they're doing is, this is a contempt charge trap. Y'all have all heard of perjury traps. This is a contempt charge trap because what they're doing is they're making this, some of these rulings are so openly ridiculous that they're forcing the Trump administration to defy them so that they can set them up for a contempt charge. And then all of the hullabaloo that would bring in, not to mention the fact that they would love to have this set up, say, coming into 2026 in the midterm elections, say the Democrats win the House back. Then they have this right there in their back pocket to come at Trump on impeachment. And as you guys saw in Trump's last term, they will throw an impeachment Trump at charge for stepping on a banana peel. It's straight up ridiculous. But we are coming to a point with all of these judges where it can make the entire judiciary illegitimate. Because if the Supreme Court is going to have to step in and rule on all of this, and a good point there on that was this, y'all have probably all heard about this famous case where this judge in D.C. was trying to tell the Trump administration, first of all, that they had to stop for a minute. They had to stop these flights of the terrorists out of our country. And then he presumed to tell the Trump administration to turn around military aircraft flights full of terrorists in midair when they were outside of the jurisdiction of the United States. Obviously, there's so many things wrong with that. First of all, I don't even believe the judge had jurisdiction to weigh in on that at all. And second, he doesn't have jurisdiction over the military. He doesn't have jurisdiction outside the United States. All of this stuff is so fraught with problems and so ridiculous. The SCOTUS is going to have to weigh in on this, or we are going to a place we're never going to come back from with the judiciary. There's the music. We will be right back, and we got Kat on line one.
Tackling the issues that shape our state. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Hey. I know we got Kat here on line one, and I know she wants to weigh in on what we were just talking about. Stand by here, one. Kat, do you hear me?
I hear you, John.
Good morning, ma'am. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. It's dark. It's very dark this time of the morning.
So early, John. What are you doing on the radio so early? I got a bulletin that you were going to be on the radio, and I said, well, I got to call in.
Well, I did the Nancy Kerrigan to Aaron the other day. You know, I waited for him to come around the corner, and I whacked his knee. So he's out this morning. I basically took him out of action. So, you know, they had to put in the number six player here. So that's why I'm here.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll just settle with you then, you know. Anyways, I heard you talking about that lawfare. So, excuse me. I wanted to bring up this article that was put out by Western Montana News, and I posted it on X. And the headline is Montana AG, Austin Knutson, joins multi-state brief supporting immediate deportation of Trent Aragua members because there was a court in D.C. that basically put out an order and made it so that we could not, in the United States, just deport Trent Aragua members. And it's just another one of these lawfare things. I don't understand the common sense behind it. These people are some of the most, as you know, John, vicious gang members. We're not talking about Bloods and Crips from the 80s in L.A. We're talking about you have to kill people, torture people, bury people alive. You know all of this. I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. But, you know, this is a whole different ballgame, and I'm glad our AG, Austin, is doing this. But this is just crazy. I mean, we have got to knock some of these judges down a couple of notches, and it's not because we want to outdo one branch or the other. It's that this judicial branch thinks it has more reach than our executive branch. So I'm going to leave it there. I'm going to hang up. John, you have a wonderful morning, and good job on the radio.
All right. Thank you very much, Kat. Kat is always, you know, keeping up with the news, and she's always on top of all this stuff. And this guy, the guy she's talking about there in D.C. with the TDA case, is this guy Boasberg. And he immediately issued an injunction against the Trump administration for using the Alien Enemies Act against these domestic terror groups. And what President Trump did here a few weeks ago, he issued an executive order designating several of these groups, including Mexican cartel members, as domestic terror groups. He is then implementing the Alien Enemies Act to get rid of them faster. It's just another tool to use in getting rid of these people. And also, when you bring in the terror designation, that also brings in other agencies that can also assist in the fight. That's going to bring in our intelligence agencies, the FBI, and not just what normally these guys, because so many of them are drug traffickers, that would fall to the DEA, say, and ICE and Homeland and all that stuff. But this brings in a whole bunch of other money and a whole bunch of other resources to bear here. The idea that he can say, here's the problem. It's written right there in black and white that the president can do this. So for him to come out and try to say, no, you can't, or we're going to stop you from doing it right now while we decide whether or not you can do this, is approaching the ridiculous. And I think I saw Sean Davis or Julie Kelly, some of these people, these writers out there, they're talking about, they're making the example for you that what has to happen at the Supreme Court of the United States, the very, very top pinnacle of our judicial system. Even there, you have to have five justices out of the nine agree to appoint before it is considered established precedent. But now, it's become just accepted fact that these, whatever they are, 700 of these inferior district court judges out here across the land can just proclaim something and stop the president of the United States, stop the entire executive branch. So far, the Trump administration is playing their game, going along with this, and hasn't just flat out told them to pound sand. But that day will come. It surely will come. It's got to come. Because you're not going to see enough action of this quickly enough, getting up through the circuit courts and getting to the Supreme Court, where people who maybe, possibly, are sane and reasonable individuals would put a stop to all this. And I had a point I wanted to bring up about the legality of this whole thing. I had a real good friend of ours, a guy named Ron Coleman, who's a big, big, successful lawyer out of the D.C. area. He called into our spaces the other night, Spaces on X, and talked to us for about 40 minutes about jurisdiction. And he told us on there, the way they established jurisdiction in this case was the fact that Trump and Kristi Noem and Pam Bondi reside in the D.C. area. So that's how he had jurisdiction over this deportation of these terrorists. When those planes took off out of Texas, he was trying to say that he has jurisdiction because those people live in D.C. Now, think of it for a second, how ridiculous that is. If that's true, then every single action taken by the executive branch across the United States, all of it originates from D.C., right? All of those policies and their main bosses, the orders, everything emanate from D.C. So you could make the case then that these clowns, these ridiculous clowns out of D.C. could have jurisdiction over everything. Now, I get the fact, I do get this one point. You could make the case that if Donald Trump himself, he's the one that signed that executive order there in D.C. The act of signing that order took place there in D.C. Okay, that's what gives the D.C. court jurisdiction over this. I get that. Well, I mean, then all Trump's got to do is start signing this stuff out of Mar-a-Lago. Go down to Mar-a-Lago and start signing this stuff. But there's just no way you can tell me how, because the entire bureaucracy of the executive branch resides in the D.C. area, that then gives these D.C. circuit courts jurisdiction over everything the man does. It's patently ridiculous. And this guy, to read the transcripts of what this guy was saying in court the other day, telling the government that he had jurisdiction over military aircraft that were already outside, that not only took off from Texas, which is outside his jurisdiction, but they were already outside the United States. Military aircraft that he had a right to tell them to turn around. The arrogance of these people and the overreach of these people is incredible. Now, gotta say, good on the Trump administration, because you know what they did? They played lawfare and word games right back at this guy, because apparently he messed up in his order, in big quotes, for these planes to turn around. He said that orally. He did not actually put it in the written order back to the government. So that's what the government argued when they came in the next day. And of course, those planes are long gone and those people are never coming back. It's over. But they were arguing back, saying, Your Honor, that is what controlled here was what you said in the written order. The stuff about the airplanes was you said orally, so we didn't consider that controlling. And that's another little game you play back at these people. You use their own obstruction back at them and absolutely hold every single thing to the letter of the law, the letter of the order, and you just drag out and obstruct. And another point on this, the Trump administration from now on is going to have to move. Every time they make a move, it's number one, going to have to be in complete and utter secrecy. Okay, they can't let it out. When they do press the execute button, they're going to have to move like lightning. Get this all done. Tear all of this stuff down so that then when these judges come back and say, build it back up, then they just say, sorry, Your Honor. Gee whiz, too late. We already broke the windshield on that car. Going to take quite a while to piece it back together again. Anyway, there's the music, and we will be back right after this break.
Turn up your radio. Here's the Sean Hannity Morning Minute.
There are these protesters showing up at these town halls for Republican Congress people. And then the media picks up on Republican Congress people getting an earful because they support Elon Musk. No, this is not organic. We're now discovering that those protesters are part of organizations, radical left-wing organizations that are sabotaging these town halls instead of giving questions to real constituents, and they're designed to create as much trouble and confrontation as they possibly can. So if you see that on TV and the fake news media and the state-run legacy media mob is lying to you, just know that the odds are very high that it's not real.
Check out the Sean Hannity radio show later today, right here.
Artificial intelligence, AI, it's all you hear about. But how far away is it? And what are the potential threats from AI that could totally upend the way Americans live their lives? What will it do to the job market? What will the unemployment rate be? What does it mean for data privacy or cybersecurity? How about the banking system or national security? The ECB has already warned about a bubble in AI stocks. Could this spread to other sectors? If you have $50,000 or more saved for retirement, this may not be the time to wait and find out. Learn how you could help protect your life savings using precious metals like gold and silver. Right now, you can get a free gold and silver kit from the top-rated precious metals company, Goldco. On top of that, you could get up to a 10% instant match in bonus silver with a qualified account. Visit HannityGold.com or call 855-815-GOLD. One more time, visit HannityGold.com or call 855-815-GOLD.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. We'll see increasing cloudiness across the region today and some areas of rain and snow moving in towards the Livingston and Bozeman areas this afternoon. Rain showers possible later this afternoon in Billings. For tonight, a few rain and snow showers around early on. Otherwise, low temperatures from 22 in Bozeman to around 32 degrees in the Billings area. That's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors. Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August.
Be a lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast's like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search our names, Clay and Buck. Listen and subscribe.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Friend.
Time now for a legislative update brought to you by the Montana Family Foundation. Here's President of the Montana Family Foundation and former Speaker Pro Tem of the Montana House of Representatives, Jeff Laszlocki.
With the transmittal break behind them, the legislature is now moving full force toward adjournment sometime at the beginning of May. Every day is filled with committee hearings and floor action, and with each bill that moves forward or is killed, the final outcome of the session becomes more and more clear. It's like a giant centrifuge that spins around and around, separating the good ideas from the bad, those bills worthy of passage versus those that need more work. Today, we have three bills up. The first is House Bill 446, a bill to revise Montana's indecent exposure laws. This bill narrowly passed the House and will be heard today in Senate Judiciary. The purpose is essentially a reiteration of House Bill 121, which is awaiting Governor Gianforte's signature. Both bills are designed to protect private spaces such as restrooms or locker rooms from encroachment by members of the opposite sex. The new section states that a person commits the offense of indecent exposure in a public place when the person purposely or knowingly, under circumstances in which the person knows the conduct is likely to cause affront or alarm, exposes their genitals or intimate parts to members of the opposite biological sex or opposite the person's sex observed at birth. That last phrase is important. Bill sponsors are now pushing back against bill drafters who use the woke term sex assigned at birth as though the assignment was arbitrary. After introduction, the bill was actually amended to use the more correct and obvious term sex observed at birth. It's important when debating these bills not to adopt the other side's phraseology. In our case, we stick with the truth. The bill has already passed the more moderate House of Representatives and should have no trouble passing the conservative Senate. Our team will be there to testify in support. Then, later today, we have two bills up on the House and Senate floors. House Bill 82 generally revises laws related to crimes against children. This bill has massive support and will be on the governor's desk shortly. The bill creates the crime of grooming a child for a sexual offense and also has language that makes it easier for law enforcement to conduct sting operations where a perpetrator thinks he's talking to a minor when they're actually talking to a cop. An example of this played out in real time recently when a Minnesota state legislator showed up for a rendezvous with who he thought was a 16-year-old girl and was arrested when the girl turned out to be a big, burly member of law enforcement. The final component of the bill also criminalizes the creation of computer-generated child pornography, whether real or synthesized by artificial intelligence. This bill passed the House 100-0, was amended slightly in the Senate where it passed 50-0, and is now back in the House for a final concurrence. We predict the bill will pass unanimously. The final bill up today on the Senate floor is House Bill 300, a bill that revises laws related to discrimination in education. This is a bill that seeks to address unfair actions by transgenders from yet another angle, declaring it to be an act of discrimination for a biological male to play in women's sports or to use women's restrooms, locker rooms, shower rooms, or sleeping quarters. It passed both the House and Senate on nearly party-line votes and is up for its final vote today before going to the governor's desk. Women and children are now under constant attack by the woke left and radical leftist judges, and the legislature is doing everything in its power to push back hard. For the sake of our kids and grandkids, I pray that we win. For the Montana Family Foundation, this is Jeff Laszlocki reminding you that this government is your government, and your input does make a difference.
Contact the Montana Family Foundation at 406-628-1141 or on the web at montanafamily.org.
And we are are back. There we go. There's our bumper music coming in right there. We've only got a few minutes here, a few seconds here before we go back to the break. I'll see you guys past the top of the hour here in a minute. We got a lot of stuff to talk about and a lot of people on the phone line. So I will see y'all in a few minutes.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
Economists worry about things that ordinary people don't give a second thought to. We try to measure growth. After all, that requires measuring what the economy produces. It's easy in this rough sense. We convert physical production to dollars and add it all up, using the prices of the products, of course. But here's a new problem that's emerging. A lot of what was produced in the digital economy has no price. Consider the production of photographs. Once upon a time, that involved film, services to produce it, and the printing of photos. Cash changed hands, we jotted it up. No problem. Not so today. Smartphones give us endless pictures for nothing. Just as online searches, social media posts, and other digital content yields value yet commands no price. Measured in the traditional way, photography has shrunk significantly in the last 20 years. But the digital economy is actually growing, almost twice as fast as everything else, according to new research from the federal statistical agencies. I'm Patrick Parkin.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.